Hello, Joan. It's nice to have you back here in studio again.
Well, it's been an incredible week when you look back at all the events, the encyclical Caritas in Veritate being the highlight of the week, the much-anticipated encyclical of the Pope, which he himself said that he wanted this to be come out actually in 2007 and be a 40th anniversary commemoration of Paul VI's Populorum Progressio. And because of the nascent, at that time, global crisis and watching how things were developing and not necessarily working out well for the world economy, he and his closest collaborators watched how things were going, and he just kind of waited to see the these ever new and ever changing developments on the world global scene. We also have to highlight important visits this week. There was the Prime Minister of Japan, first Catholic, if I'm not mistaken. Very rarely, if ever, has there been a Catholic Prime Minister, and the Prime Minister of Australia, Kevin Rudd, on Thursday, and practically as we're taping, U.S. President Barack Obama due Friday afternoon after the G8 conference in Aquila and before he leaves for Kenya. So a week of big visits, and we must say to our listeners that a lot of this activity is kind of taking place because the Holy Father leaves on Monday the 13th. On vacation in the mountains of northern Italy till the end of the month. And, of course, he goes to Costa Gandolfo. So it'll be a relatively quiet period for people in the Vatican. Yeah.
But, of course, all of this happening this week as the G8 summit gets underway in L'Aquila. The Pope himself reiterated a lot of the elements that were in his encyclical in his letter to the Italian premier, Silvio Berlusconi, at the very start of the week.
Well, you know, I'm really glad you mentioned that because, of course, we got that letter, like you said, at the start, days before the conference began. And then when the actual encyclical came out and you started reading it and went to the press conference and so forth, you realized how right on the Holy Father was and why shouldn't he be at the Angelus. And he was actually addressing, obviously, all the leaders, though it was written to Silvio Berlusconi. And the Pope appealed to leaders to listen to the voice of Africa and the countries that are less developed economically, noting in a number of parts, too, of the encyclical, as we were to see days later, that it's actually, if we're all being affected by this global downturn, it's the poor who are being affected. The poor just are poorer,
and they
have less, and they're suffering the most. And the Pope wrote that, or said in the Angelus, that the economic crisis means there's a real risk, and this is so important, a real risk not only that hopes to emerge from extreme poverty will be dashed, but that populations that so far have benefited from a minimum of material well-being will fall into poverty, basically what we were just saying. And I kind of like this phrase. The Pope called on leaders to, quote, reform the international financial architecture and to avoid the speculative operations blamed for the crisis and to ensure public and private credit is made available, obviously, for economic development, for job creation, and so forth. And he did highlight Sunday, and again in the encyclical, the urge leaders to improve access to education and jobs and to work to create a fair international trade system. And I think one of the most important points he's actually made throughout the week, because the encyclical, again, at the Wednesday audience was the focus of the whole audience. But the Pope did say Sunday in his audience and certainly in the encyclical, he said all nations must be included in key decisions and multilateralism must be strengthened not only in the economic field but also on issues, he said, concerning security, disarmament, health, and the environmental protection, migration, I mean globalization. He touched on all the issues. But I do think it behooves us to talk about the emphasis that he placed on life, the right to life, on defending life, obviously from conception to the natural death. And he said, I mean, life is at the center of all of this. How can we talk development if we aren't talking human life, the right to it, and the obvious duty to protect it?
And also the fundamental dignity of every single human person.
Every single human being, and this is all part of the development process, and he explains it very, very beautifully, goes into detail in the encyclical.
But in fact, if listeners are interested, they'll find a lot of information not only on your blog site, but also on Vatican Radio, which has been covering throughout the week issues that he touches on in the encyclical. So, and also, there is a summary of it as well on our website. So I invite listeners to to check that out.
It was a very important week from the point of view of the encyclical, and I think we've mentioned but didn't stress the fact it came out Tuesday before the G8 conference began in L'Aquila, Italy. And all the world leaders, by the way, had a copy of it in their hands, as did the world bishops before this came out. So to put it into practice is what the Holy Father said we should pray for. And by the way, he does say, I don't offer solutions in this encyclical. He outlines the problems, and he points to what should dominate as leaders make decisions.
Now, let's talk quickly about some of the meetings that he's had with leaders such as the Japanese Prime Minister and the Australian Prime Minister, Kevin Rudd.
The Japanese one was very, very interesting. There's actually just a very brief statement that was made by the Holy See press office, and stressing, as most of these statements do for when heads of state or government visit, stressing very much what the Holy See and that leader or that leader's country have in common in working for global peace. And, of course, Japan, you've got that particular area of the world, Asia now, where the big threat comes from an armed and weapon-testing North Korea. And I mean, which that very, very much affects Japan, that very much affects China and so forth. So, but again, it was very exciting to have a Japanese prime minister. And there's something like 127 million people that live in Japan, and I think it's only, 1 million are Catholics. I have to tell you the story. When John Paul went to Japan I don't know if he went more than once, but let's say when he went the first time, something that had never happened in the history of the country happened for his visit. And that is to say, the papal motorcade, normally when the emperor would go from point A to point B in Japan or someplace else, his car stops at red lights like every other car. The emperor does not have any special privileges. For the only known time in the history of Japan that cars, a motorcade, was allowed to go through the red lights and just proceed with a police escort, I might add, was when John Paul visited Japan. So a little bit of trivia, perhaps not too well known the fact, but think of the respect that showed
course,
for the man and
course.
His office. Not that the Japanese don't respect their emperor. But and there was another important event this week. I know our time is short, but I think we want to mention the Pope's motu proprio, which he had announced quite some time ago, in which he put the Ecclesia Dei Commission dependent on the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith. Now, Ecclesia Dei was set up on July 2nd, 1988, by John Paul II, to deal with the problems, doctrinal, liturgical, and so forth, that the Schismatic Society of St. Pius X had when Archbishop Lefebvre, on June 30th, 1988, ordained four priests as bishops. Of course, those ordinations were illicit. Those men today may not, they're not part of the Catholic Church. They may not exercise any ministry. Now, this document that Benedict signed, he signed it on the same day, July 2nd. It was only released this week. I think it was Wednesday, but he signed it July 2nd, so 21 years to the day after John Paul had signed the Ecclesia Dei thing. And Ecclesia Dei now is under the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith. So Cardinal William Levada, who heads that congregation, is also the president of this commission. It will still have its own staff members. But the Holy Father wanted to indicate that in working with the members of the Society of Pius X, that it was now much more a question of doctrine than it was of liturgy that had to be solved. Liturgy, the Pope 2 years ago, in fact, July 7th, 2 years ago, he allowed a broader use of the Tridentine Rite, the Latin Mass, the 1962 Missal. So now it's more doctrinal problems, the disagreements that the bishops and others have with the Vatican Council II, with the magisterium of the popes since that time. So it was a very important thing. We knew it was coming. The Pope had already said in his March 10th letter to bishops, explaining why he lifted the excommunication of the four men ordained by Lefebvre. He explained in that letter that he would very shortly be putting Ecclesia Dei under or dependent, make it dependent on the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith. So a lot of big things, and I don't know if you noticed, but I noticed when I worked at the Vatican Information Service that very often before John Paul, and now I see this with Benedict a little bit, before they would go on a vacation or a very lengthy trip, it was like, okay, here's some things on my desk. Let's sign these, promulgate yes. these, get these, go. Really, you know, lots of audiences. And so it's kind of like, okay, let's take care of all this business before. I think you and I would do the same
sure.
thing.
I'm doing it sure. right now before I go on vacation.
Exactly, exactly. So we understand the Holy Father and his desire to get to the mountains. I'd like to join the papal party, let me tell you.
Me too. Well, thanks so much, Joan. It's been a pleasure having you here again, Joan. So have a wonderful vacation.
And see you next time. Yeah.